Hello, and thank you for listening to the World Dreamer podcast, where we take popular stories and settings and turn them into tabletop RPGs. My name is Matt, and today we're going to be delving into the world of Hollow Knight. Alright, so before we get into the discussion, I have a couple of guests here with me, some friends of mine with a, you know, love and connection to Hollow Knight. You guys wanna introduce yourselves?
I'll go first, I guess. Hi, my name is Spencer. I was a friend of Matt and Gail's, and I was recently introduced to Hollow Knight by Matt quite a bit ago, and definitely fell in love with it, and be interested to see what a sort of RPG would look like in that world. So, yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of Gail, Gail, what's your name?
I'm not quite sure I remember. I'm pretty sure it's Gail.
Yeah, sounds like a good guess. Sounds like a good guess.
Yes.
Got Hollow Knight about a year and a quarter ago, and then I really just kind of jumped right in. And hoo boy, was it an adventure.
It certainly was. As far as my personal connection to Hollow Knight, I guess I should also say I'm Matt. You probably heard that in the introduction, but you know, since this is the first episode, it's worth repeating. I first got Hollow Knight definitely not immediately on its release, but I want to say maybe 2 years ago now. I played it. There was a long hiatus in between, and then Gail and Spencer got into Hollow Knight, and I replayed it very recently and sort of fell in love with it all over again. But yeah, in case you haven't tell, we are talking about Hollow Knight, and I guess to sort of start things off, I guess that begs the question, why are we talking about Hollow Knight? What about Hollow Knight really sort of speaks to us, and what do we want to see in sort of a world we would put ourselves in for Hollow Knight?
We're talking about it because it slaps. Next question.
All right. You know, that's very...
Great game.
Yeah. Phenomenal game. No one's arguing that. However, I think perhaps we should be a little bit more specific, maybe.
Perhaps. I mean, I know the reason that I really like it. I am a big fan of the Soulsborne genre, and the way that I heard about Hollow Knight was I heard it was a really hard platformer with challenging fights, and I was like, oh, I've played Dark Souls. I like a good old challenge, and yeah, it very much delivered.
Yeah, absolutely. There are many comparisons to Dark Souls to be drawn with. Not only the difficulty, but also very much the sort of gloomy atmosphere and you wandering around this sort of destroyed area.
Yeah.
And also the fact that you're meeting these other characters who have their own stories along the way, and it doesn't just, give you the lore. You have to actually talk to them.
Yeah, very much that as well.
I was also going to just say I like bugs, and I like that the elf things have bug themes. It's always fun to try to figure out what type of bug they're based on, and they do seem to have thought of themes for each type of bug, like what their abilities are and such, which I'm sure we might get into later.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, funny enough, since you mentioned that, if we're starting to get into the mechanics of how a Hollow Knight RPG would work, I think a good place to start would be how people would make their playable characters. I think a good place to start would be sort of the type of bugs, because
yes,
there are a definite variety of bugs that are specifically named, because just off the top of my head, I can think of, because you've got the spiders in Deep Nest, you've got the bees, you've got the moths, you got the mantises.
Can't forget them, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, the mantises are very interesting. There's also, there's the flukes, because if I recall correctly, it's implied some of the flukes had sentience because of the fluke hermit.
Yeah, the fluke hermit.
Yeah.
Because, the fluke hermit could, think for himself and speak.
There's also just, I think, the generic beetles seem to be the main, citizens of Hollow Nest.
A lot of, beetles. You could probably separate, the vessels as sort of their own thing.
Yeah. There's also there's the snails.
Oh, yeah, the snails. The snails were very sort of magic heavy.
Snail shamans?
Yeah. Yeah, they're the ones that you usually learn the spells from.
There's also the mosskin, which are the green path denizens.
Yeah, and there's the mushrooms, because the mushrooms are their own people.
Yes.
You
can't forget good old Mr. Mushroom.
Yeah, get the secret ending.
Yeah. Is that every? I think that's everyone. Every like intelligent race.
I think that's every like named specific like tribe we see multiples of. There are definitely other types of bugs you could flavor in as playable races.
Yeah, like Cornifer is a mosquito.
Yeah, and you've got, I'm pretty sure, is Cloth supposed to be a cicada?
Yes. Yeah.
And then the Watcher Knights are rhinoceros beetles.
Yeah. Spencer would know more than I do.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely other bugs that you could maybe sort of be, but I think as far as like named, like specific, there are a lot of these. I think we touched upon the most.
And I think that's probably plenty for a starting point for like what races.
Yeah. And you could give them certain like, you know, stat benefits and whatnot. Like I mentioned, the snails are generally more associated with magic, so I think you could have them start off with sort of like a bonus, like spell-like abilities or whatnot. The bees just have like wings, so you could probably just be like, hey, you can fly. Be happy with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could have like sort of a bonus, like speed for the mantises and whatnot. Though what I'm curious to ask both of you your opinions on, as far as, because like the fantasy races or species seem pretty clear cut. However, what do you think should be done, if anything, about a class system?
That is definitely a harder question to answer for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually, like last year, I was like, what if I just took Hollow Knight and turned it into 5th edition? And then that just fell apart. But I did have like a general class system.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there are elements that you could incorporate, because, like, I don't know if 5e is necessarily the best format for a Hollow Knight thing.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
Because it's very heavy and very slow, which works very much for D&D. However, Hollow Knight tends to be a lot more fast and light and fluid.
Yeah. But so, like, I got my notes. I've got a bunch of different things.
Uh-huh.
Like, let's see, there's knight, so, like, you like, sword and board, generic. You got your nail, got your shield.
Of course, yeah.
Magician, that's, like, the soul master. They use, like, their soul to power spells.
Mm-hmm.
Made a distinction between that and a different class that, like, physically just projects their soul to attack. Like, less so in magic and more just, like, the raw energy.
Mm.
Got one that I named the Tailor, which I was, like, modeling out kind of after Hornet, how she uses the needle and thread.
Oh, yeah.
Like, a very mobility-based build. I called it the Lord. Like, you use soul to, like, buff allies.
Kind of like Warlord in 4E.
Yeah, Warlord. What a time.
Mm.
Now, I've got Lancer and Crystalborn. Crystalborn, I was thinking,
Crystal Guardian?
Yeah, that dude.
Like, yeah.
And then Lancer? I just have spears. I do not remember where I... Oh, Mantis. The Mantis Lords. That's what I was modeling that one after.
Oh, yeah, because I was going to ask, like, I would argue the nails, if anything, are more spear-like than sword-like, honestly.
Yeah. Like, it's really just all based on length, honestly. Yeah.
That's true.
It's like a lot of the enemies that you'll encounter slash, whereas Hornet's weapon still counts as a nail, but, like, it's a thrusting weapon.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they say it is a nail, but she uses it a lot more for thrusting because of the thread she attaches it to.
Yeah.
I'd like to propose something, and I'm curious to hear your opinions on it. Do we even need a class system at all? Because something I might argue is sort of a big facet of building your character in Hollow Knight the game is the badges.
Oh, yeah.
And you can sort of equip the badges to, you know, give yourself different abilities and benefits and whatnot. So something I might argue is that we don't necessarily have a class system, but you start with maybe a certain number of badge slots and, like, options for badges. And then as you level up, you get more of those and more badges you can put in. And in addition to that, it almost creates sort of a more fluid thing where you can change up your character's abilities depending on, you know, what you want to accomplish in a mission or what you sort of want your character's flavor to be, if that changes.
I think I like that one a lot. I would go with that one. And you have freedom to choose your weapon at the start as long as it's not super.
Yeah. Like, I kind of like the everyone kind of has access to everything vibe.
Yeah. And I imagine there'd be somewhat of a flexibility for, like, bug designs, for, like, character starts. However, I think you could have a definite, like, hey, here's some very common things in Hollow Knight that you could use as sort of an easy basis.
Yeah. But, like, I kind of like the idea of, like, everyone gets access to pretty much everything. Because, like, I think one of the big things about D&D is that, like, if you want to try out a new race or a new class, it's a lot harder. You usually, like, need to find a one-shot to test it out.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, with this, you could be like, all right, for the next session, I'm going to try a different loadout, see how I like it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that would be very beneficial and also sort of more faithful to Hollow Knight.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
And I assume these badges would probably be sort of stat-altering things, so I'm wondering, like, what would we want to do as far as stats go? Would we want a sort of similar loadout to D&D, or is there anything we'd want to emphasize more?
I would go with probably the same sort of loadout.
Yeah, that's fair. It is a good sort of set standard. You know, just have something in replace for strength, dexterity, con, intelligence, wisdom, charisma.
Should wisdom and intelligence be separate or combined? Because I know they are definitely separate things under normal circumstances.
But. Yeah.
I guess that's true, but, like, I guess how much are they necessarily separated in? Well, I guess it's hard to say because a lot of interactions with the world and people are sort of just them talking at you.
Yeah.
Because you don't really talk.
Also, I don't think you can actually speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't get the chance to respond.
Yeah, but do you think intelligence and wisdom would sort of separate better? Because if you're doing a Hollow Knight-esque world, you'd probably be following the theme, and a lot of it would probably be fairly exploration-heavy, as Hollow Knight tends to be. That and also combat-heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if, like, the social aspects would be as important.
Probably not.
That's true. I would still argue for having some there just because you do interact with people in Hollow Knight, and I think sort of having some options for that might be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
However, it would probably be one of the lesser emphasized things. As opposed to maybe a system like Weaver Dice, which has very complicated sort of charisma-based things.
You do also, I mean, I'm assuming, this is kind of a question I was going to bring up later, but I'm assuming the era you'd be assuming the players would be playing in would be the era that you're playing through in the game, as opposed to, like, earlier in the timeline. Because if it was earlier in the timeline, then you might want more social interactions.
That's true. That's true.
But you would have to do a little more work. Because there's not really a whole ton of info about that.
I mean, again, kind of the fun of taking a world and sort of adapting it to your own means would be sort of fleshing out the areas that the original didn't flesh out that you wanted to see. And so I guess it would really depend on players and the DM what they sort of wanted out of the game. Because, like, if they wanted to sort of relive Hollow Knight but with their own sort of characters, I'd imagine they probably set it in then. But I imagine there'd probably be people interested in sort of setting it before those events and exploring, like, the era of the Pale King and whatnot.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes.
But something else I wanted to talk about, a very important aspect of Hollow Knight, is the combat, because one of the big draws of the game is sort of the difficulty of a lot of the bosses. Is there anything that either of you particularly want to see or have out of combat that maybe you wouldn't necessarily get from just a D&D system?
I was thinking about spell-wise, if you're doing, like, how they use soul and all that, it wouldn't be quite a literal translation from the game, but I was wondering if the system for spells, because I remember Gale, that one RPG we played, it was like a one-shot, it was just us three.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember the caster class, like, had, in order to pay for spells, you pay with life, and I was wondering if that would work here, because I thought that was, like, with how soul is kind of life force, and again, it's not an exact translation, but yeah.
I imagine you could probably have something akin to the soul system in Hollow Knight, where you get a charge akin to damage dealt and or taken, depending on how you build your character, and then you could expend that for use of, like, a more limited number of spells.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if paying for spells with life is necessarily the correct answer, but I think definitely having like a payment system based on like a separate sort of soul meter is something to think about.
Yeah. Like, largely it's the question of how you would charge it.
Yeah. And I think some of that would have to tie back into probably either damage dealt or damage received in some capacity.
Yeah. Yeah, and then also, I noticed a lot that the, like, Desolate Dive, even though it's a magic skill, some of the damage that it's got does recharge some of your soul.
Really?
Yeah. So some of the magic abilities do, like, come back.
Yeah, so long as you're successful in using them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, tying back into the race thing, perhaps for the, if you're going to choose a vessel, then one of the things you could do with that soul that you get, like, that the race feature, like, basically, like, the Dragonsborn Dragon Breath is instead you would be able to use that for healing, whereas other races wouldn't be able to do that. They need to seek outside sources.
That's true. That's true. Because that's a heavy aspect of the character you play as in Hollow Knight, who is a vessel.
And I think all of us, you could extrapolate that to all vessels.
Yeah.
I want to bring up your opinions on a couple of aspects specifically to the gameplay of Hollow Knight the video game that I think might be interesting to try and translate into a tabletop RPG setting. And the first is how death is handled in Hollow Knight. As a context for those who don't know, in Hollow Knight, when you die, where your body dies, a sort of specter is generated. It's referred to as a shade, and it basically has all of the money, and I imagine in a game probably you could have like resources or something held onto it, and you sort of have to trek back to where you were and defeat the shade in order to get that back. And seeing as Hollow Knight is a game that emphasizes difficulty, and I imagine a DM might want to try and emphasize difficulty, do you think there could be a system in which player death is not necessarily sort of the end for the character, and there could be sort of a shade-esque system?
I know technically the vessels are the only ones that leave the stain, however.
That's true, but I think you could still sort of have that in a way, and maybe it wouldn't fit the lore 100%, but I think it could still be interesting.
Yeah.
I think ultimately with that kind of thing, it really depends on the world that you created.
Yeah.
Because part of what makes that work with Hollow Knight is you've got like the network of benches, and ultimately anytime you die, you're not that far from where you would regain your shade. So by doing that kind of thing, either you're setting up your players to like have to make quite the trek, or you're, like, getting this network of basically respawn points.
That's true. That's true. I don't think it would work for every setting necessarily, but I think it could be, like, an optional rule.
Yeah.
That could be implemented.
Yeah, it's just something that the, like, game master would have to take into account when building the world.
And the second one I wanted to talk about, it's a bit strange, but a big aspect of Hollow Knight as an action platformer is jumping. And I think because jumping isn't really a thing you tend to do a lot in D&D or really most RPGs that I can think of, but I think because there are like flying options for D&D and some other things, but there usually isn't that much of sort of a verticality to combat. And I think with Hollow Knight being a platformer, it could be interesting to have sort of that third dimension of movement to combat. What do you guys think about that?
It's just, again, how, like, the dungeon master, game master is going to work that in.
Yeah, it would be, I'd imagine it'd be pretty difficult to implement, but it could definitely differentiate the system from other systems that might be out there.
That's fair. And I just think Hollow Knight should have some differences that sort of differentiate it, because I think the combat would definitely, you'd have to make it a lot faster than D&D, I think, because D&D combat tends to be very slow. Although the problem is, I haven't found a lot of really great options for speeding up a lot of D&D combat. Do you guys have any advice on that?
I mean, there is that counterattack system that we've been, or that I've been using in my thing, which could speed it up a little, because you're dealing more damage. But that does come with a few unfortunate side effects that, like if you're fighting a single enemy, there's some drawbacks to that.
Yeah. For context for listeners, a lot of Powered by the Apocalypse systems have in combat sort of counterattack options for both players and enemies where immediately after being attacked, unless something special is done due to a high damage benefit, enemies can sort of attack back immediately, which I think does definitely make combat faster. However, you sort of have to manage enemy health and damage output a lot more.
And also, I don't think Hollow Knight really has any sort of counter. And they have the parry system.
Yeah, they have the parry system, and I believe both Hornet and the Hollow Knight himself have counters.
That's true. Yeah, I forgot about that.
So it's not unheard of. However, it's definitely not a big aspect of Hollow Knight.
Yeah, they do have, like, the Smash Bros. Style enter a stance, and then counterattack one hit type thing.
But I guess since we're sort of taking a lot of liberties, not everything has to be directly from Hollow Knight.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing that I wanted to touch on was, I think the large part of why Dungeons & Dragons combat takes so long is, like, martial classes, it's really just you go in, you swing your sword, like, 2, 3, 4 times, and then you're done. Whereas, like, the casters, they have so many options as to what they want to do, which is kind of nice because the variety is good. And, like, if you want to speed up combat, I think probably the best way of doing that is limiting options, but then all combat feels the same.
Yeah.
So it's really, that's a big trade-off, is how do you keep it from becoming just you go in, do the same thing every time and leave.
That's very true. That's very true. And I guess part of that would have to be figuring out for DMs, how do I make encounters that have maybe, like, different terrains? Which is why I thought sort of the whole jumping aspect might be handy, because it kind of adds a third dimension with which to mess with terrains, or just give enemies, like, unique abilities. However, it's certainly not the easiest thing in the world to pull off.
Yeah.
I think we've touched upon a lot of the things I wanted to touch upon.
I was going to say, just about what size of dice would you be using, you think?
That's a good point, because we talked about how D&D dice sizes wouldn't necessarily work, but I guess then that begs the question, what dice size does work?
Yeah, honestly, going back to, this is from, like, 10 minutes ago, the system that I ran with you guys on, like, that snap session that one day, that one, rather than larger dice being, like, larger damage, it ran on you roll the die, if you get higher than a 4, you hit.
Yes.
And a larger die means that you're more skilled at it, because obviously it's easier to roll above 4 on a d12 than on a d4.
Yeah, I remember that. That's a good point.
Yeah. So maybe something like that, where damage output is generally the same, but you have different skills that it's easier to hit with.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, you'd have to get, again, I think 4 is a good metric to use. Like, say if you had the lowest level of skill, you'd be at a D4, where it'd be very hard, but then as you got sort of different badges and just general stat increases to boost that up, you can move up to a D6 or a D8 or a D10.
So basically no bonuses, just dice.
Yeah.
Also, Matt, I noticed you've been calling them badges, but when you're referring to badges, those are charms, right?
Charms, yes. Apologies.
Yeah, okay. No worries. I just, if there is anyone in the audience who does know of Hollow Knight and was hearing badges, probably clarify that.
Yeah. Please don't yell at me. I'm trying my best, I swear.
Please don't leave any disparaging remarks in the comments below.
Please don't leave. I'm so desperate for attention. Please don't leave. But yeah, that's a good point about dice sizes. And I think sort of having a sort of variable, like a set point for success, but variable dice sizes would be beneficial for sort of the speed aspect.
Yeah.
And would the cap be like a D12 maybe for as high as you can go? Or
Yeah. I think the cap could probably even just be like a D10.
Yeah, actually, that probably makes more sense. It's
You got like a 60% chance of success on any given roll with that.
Yeah, and you know, you'd sort of have to pace out the leveling up a lot more just to make sure your players don't get too out of hand too quickly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because if we're going through the statistics, on a D4, you've got a 20% chance of success, or 25. D6, that bumps up to a 50%. percent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, because 1, 2, 3, and then 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
You've got D8 is got 8 sides, so 5 and 8, that's like a 62.5%. And then D10, you've got 70%. So really,
it probably shouldn't go too much higher than
that. You're talking, you're like, I think that's like 75% chance.
Yeah, something like that.
D12, D20, it's wild.
Yeah, so you'd have to, like, make sure you're pacing your players to make sure they're not growing too quickly, and also you're make sure you're accurately sort of pacing your enemies on par with them.
Someone mentioned levels. How would that work?
Leveling. So this is more of a personal preference thing. I generally don't use EXP. I prefer to go by sort of a merit-based system or a landmark-based system where it's like you complete a certain encounter or do a certain task and it's like, okay, I'll level you up now. But I think with sort of the bigger benefits you get from even the smallest increases, I imagine leveling up would be either something that happened very rarely, or I think the better option would be something that happened at a more like frequent pace that you could do with D&D, but you don't necessarily get too much from it. Just a stat increase or like another charm notch or like an option to like level up a proficiency in like a nail or something.
Yeah, like probably get something like you've got the option between you could get a charm notch or you could like every other level upgrade a die size.
Yeah.
And like some charms are just restricted by levels, so maybe sometimes you level up and you don't get any immediate benefit.
Yeah.
But you've got, oh, there's a new charm that I just got access to.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that works. All right. Yeah, I think we have a pretty good picture of what some ideas for how to sort of construct a Hollow Knight RPG would look. And if people out there listening want to sort of take that to inspiration, feel free, you know? We're doing this for you to sort of flourish your own creative inspiration.
Get those creative chops. I don't actually remember how that phrase goes.
Going, I don't know.
Creative juices flowing, yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Thank you both for tuning in with me and talking about this.
Thank you for having us.
No problem. To do a quick plug in place of Gale, if you're interested in more D&D content, Gale is a part of a group called The Moth Company. You can check them out on YouTube or follow them on Instagram at @the_moth_company. They're pretty good. I like them.
As do I.
I'm currently DMing our second campaign. We got some wild stuff going on. And then in a few months, we might have something new for everyone. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
A few months, date of recording. This is mid-March, just to date that comment.
Yeah, just to let you know when we're making this in reference from. But yeah, thank you so much. And I think we have something good worked out. Thank you for listening to the episode. If you enjoyed it, please continue following us on the platform of your choice and recommend this to other people you know. In addition, consider following us on Instagram at the.world.dreamer. This has been Matt, and I hope you have a good day.